meeting is being recorded.
Welcome home. We are WNST, AM 1570, Tass of Baltimore. We are Baltimore positive. We are positively into summertime in last place, or what we call Baltimore baseball here over the course of my 35-year career. We're going to be out doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour because they taste good. It tastes better than last place. Back to the Future scratch-offs from the Maryland Lottery will be available. We're going to be at Greenmount Station in Hampstead where they have a delightful crab cake. It is the Angelina style recipe that I loved and grew up with so much. I don't get to Hampstead often, but I'm looking forward to getting up there. I got great, great guests. My buddy Howard Scherer is coming out. We're going to learn about Carroll County Youth. My friend Melody Barron's going to come out, and we're going to talk about LinkedIn Local, as well as the racetrack and gambling and OTB and all that good stuff. Also, next Friday at Fadley's at Lexington Market, and we're going to be down there with Luke, amongst others, and the Halos of Anaheim, of LA, of Southern California, formerly of Shohei Ohtani. Angels will be in town. This guy here is one of my oldest kemosabes. I don't know what's going to come out of his mouth. I have no idea. We have only really connected once or twice in 41 years. I left the Baltimore News American to go to the Sun on January 6, 1986. So that's now like 39 years ago. The death of Jim Henneman last week brought back so many sports writers, so many people. I've talked about it, written about it. You've heard me and socially opined in the Louis Aparicio picture in Henneman as the Bat Boy in 1963. Tom Cousins is about to join me, and I'm going to give the whole backstory here as best I can, and Cuz, I'll let you jump in here. Tom Cousins was an editor at Sports First and the Baltimore News American on South Street in Lombard when I was 15 years old, and I walked into the newsroom in January of 1984, 41 years ago. I was a 15-year-old kid, a guy named Tom Robinson. We called him Robbie, who went on to be the sports editor in Binghamton and then the Scranton newspaper. Still my friend. Took me and put me on the hockey beat with Gene Ubriaco in February of 1984. I was 15 years old. So Tom Cousins was among several people that we worked in the what was the commissary, which is sort of like a dining area, an old cafeteria that they turned into the sports department to create a tabloid newspaper, Hearst, called Sports First. It was America's first daily paper, and they did this under the guise of we had the Colts, we had the Orioles. The Orioles were about to win the World Series. The Colts were about to leave, and only God and Bob Irsay knew that. And William Hudnut. And the paper failed after a year, but in that year of 1983 and 84, and the paper failed and folded on the day of my son's birth, September 22nd, 1984. I did the math on this. Changed my life and my career on that day. Tom Cousins was, I don't want to have a boss, a big brother, an editor. Him, Ron Wenig, Stan Rappaport, Bob Paston, just a whole bunch of people. Chuck
Nuzzy.
Rappaport, Bob Nussgaard. My God, how can I forget him? And Tom went on to work in Sacramento and make a life in Sacramento because I never knew you were from Ocean City, Maryland. I never knew what an Oriole bleeding heart you were. I lost track of you for 30 years out in Sacramento. I knew you worked in Sacramento at the B, but then Facebook happened, and I guess Facebook gives and it takes, and it's like the Godfather. It brought you back to me, and you're out in Sacramento, and the Orioles are coming out there this week, and you're wearing all your Oriole swag. I hope I did you justice. You are the one-time, long-time sports editor of the Sacramento Bee. You made a whole life with Scott LaBarre, who gave me my first Geddy Lee interview and my first Aerosmith interview and all my first Paul Stanley interview in 1984 when I was a kid. You knew me when I was a puppy, dude. So you can tell any story you want about me. I love you. It's good to have you on. And the Orioles are playing at Sacramento. What the hell, man?
Yeah, we have Major League Baseball in Sacramento.
Have you been?
I waited for the Orioles.
Oh, so you haven't been to the ball, but you've been to that ballpark,
I've
though.
been to
Like
the
the
ballpark. It's a Triple A ballpark. It's hosted for 25 years. Our Triple A team that's was affiliated for many years with the A's, and that was when they their peak. And now they're affiliated with the Giants, and ironically, now the A's are playing there with the Giants Triple A affiliate, alternating days basically. There's baseball every day in Sacramento this summer.
I had never been to Sacramento in my life, and I knew I needed to get there. And you know, when I got there, the first thing I did was have coffee with you. I came into the newsroom, it was teary-eyed for me. I saw Scott for the first time in 40 years. And, you know, like it clearly meant a lot to me to drive in to visit with you. I did this about a year and a half ago. I did it the week the Ravens were in the championship game, and the 49ers were hosting a championship game that week a year and a half ago. And I hadn't seen you in 40 years. I don't know what you make of my radio, like how whatever I've done here has gotten to you all these years later, and Scott as
I've been
well. But
following.
Faith. Facebook's been 2 decades of doing this, but like Sacramento, explain it to me a little bit because I drove in, looks a little bit like Harrisburg. It's a little bit of like a small city for something that you've heard of where Arnold Schwarzenegger lived and Gavin Newsom runs the state and like all that stuff. But I pulled in, you were a heartbeat of a Hearst newspaper that kind of went out of business, kind of like it's so small now, like the whole business shrunk, right? And you're a victim of all of that, of all my editor buddies and all of that. But Sacramento to me, why didn't they steal the A's just a year? I mean, like, it's been sitting there and they have the NBA franchise that I guess never has won anything, but you love the Kings and you're like, I always see you like it's a civic entity. But like, why didn't they steal the A's? I don't understand the Oakland A's being this lame duck for this long and Sacramento taking them in as like a stepchild for a week or two, you know?
Well, going back, way back in the 70s, even before I arrived in Sacramento in 1984, a gentleman named Greg Lukenbill. Now, you may know that name, you may not. He's the one that brought the Kings from Kansas City to Sacramento, put him in a makeshift 10,000 seat warehouse for a couple of years. He had a vision for a Major League Baseball in the 70s, in the suburbs, what was really the country back then of Sacramento. It just never came to fruition. There was a property designated right off Highway 50. You know Highway 50, same highway. Anyway, didn't work out. He did eventually build a concrete hole in the ground that was going to be for a baseball team next to the previous arena that the Kings played in, Arco, we called it.
Now,
But
California, you're never getting any money from the state, though, right?
once
Like,
it, no. And once that happened, and he couldn't get them, they just stayed in Oakland all these years as that stadium fell apart.
I'm thinking anything that got publicly funded in California, like I think of Petco Park and what a show that was, and it wound up costing the Chargers. And then the 49ers thing in Santa Clara that took forever and ever. I mean, I remember going to Candlestick Park even after the earthquakes, you know, and seeing the cracks in the foundations of like in the upper deck, you could see through the upper deck. It was insane. And it finally got done, and then Oakland didn't want to play there, and Al Davis is nuts. And I mean, in the end, everybody's going to Vegas. And all of our lives, there
We'll
was
see.
pressure to not even put the line spread, you know, on the agate page in my scoreboard page in the 80s and 90s, because of gambling. And they've made the A's this wayward home in Sacramento. They're there, and you love baseball, and you haven't even been.
Not yet, but well, it was very expensive, so I bought the 3-game series this weekend, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. We're only 13 miles out of downtown from the stadium, but we're going to stay in town for the weekend and
And
go to three
you're gonna
baseball
walk
games.
around all weekend, and you're gonna launder up that Oriole ornithologically correct 1989 hat, 54 hat too.
Wore my jersey.
So give me life in Sacramento. You moved out there 40 years ago. You're a sports nut. You're an Oriole nut. You're from Ocean City, Maryland. All you wanted to do, like me, was be Oscar Madison, right? All you wanted to do was be a sports writer at one point in your life,
Well,
right?
yeah. Well, Lester, let me correct you there. I was born at St. Agnes Hospital in Catonsville. So I was
Oh.
born in Baltimore.
Okay.
And in the late 60s, people recall maybe the people of my age, there was this great flight out to the suburbs. We lived in the city. We lived by Leakin Park in 1968. Great flight out to the suburbs. We went to Ocean City, Maryland. I was third grade, and I spent the next 10, 12 years there.
There's no nothing in Ocean City in 1970, right? Like in the
No
summer,
con
yes.
1968, no condos, no high-rise condos
You
at
saw
all.
every carousel, you saw everything north of 59th Street go up, basically, right?
Yeah, we lived at 47th Street,
Wow.
oceanfront. My dad was an architect. He helped design this townhouse development. So we got the winter oceanfront off season. Spring came, they said, sorry, you got to go.
Ocean Pines, over the bridge with your ass.
West Coast in Philly.
My memory.
So I want
to
correct that. Then I was born in Baltimore, and to let your people know that Jim Henneman is my mom's cousin.
Oh, you're even family with Henneman. How about that?
Yeah, I never really knew him well because by the time I was doing newspaper work, I was in California.
How long did you work at the News American in Sports First? And what was your pathway to that? Because I've never asked you, Rasig comes on all the time. So for anybody out there listening, it's part of my mafia after 35 years of doing the radio. Sports First was this tabloid newspaper. It was an offshoot of the News American. It was produced by the same people. John Steadman, Bernie Miklas, Jeff Gordon. Just go down the line. Barry Levine. I can go through these names. Dick Girardi comes on all the time, was a part of that. These are foundational people in my life. We recently lost a man named Rich Petro who lived in Dundalk. His daughter and sons are all friends of mine forever. And we used to go to the racetrack with Pete and just a legendary cast of humans. I mean, John Hawkins went on to be a legendary golf writer. So all of these cast of characters are 19. Oh, there you, I mean, we go down the list. Like Tim Kirkjian told me at Henneman's funeral that he worked at the News American for 2 months in 1981 or 82, and then went down to Dallas and came back to the Sun here, that he said he met Lefty Driesell and he was supposed to be on the Terps beat, but he didn't stay at the paper long enough. He got recruited to Dallas by Dave Smith. So, I mean, Dan Shaughnessy worked in Baltimore, Clark Judge. I mean, I'm just going through all of these. Peter Pascarelli.
We had Vito Stellino.
Of course. So you worked where before the newspaper? Because I don't know anything of this about you, because all of you were like adults to me, and you can speak to my
24.
Audience of what a 15-year-old kid look, what a 15-year-old version of me walking in that newsroom. You remember me as a kid because I look like I was 11, right? I mean, I look like child labor.
You were pretty young. So let me tell you how that happened. I graduated from University of Maryland in 1982. And somewhere along the way, I have a Cal Ripken story from the University of Maryland. But let me tell you the story how I got to Sports First. And we called it Sports First because sports came first in the publication. Then there was the weather, the weather was in the back. And then there was business and news. But sports, what came first? So I was working at the Montgomery Sentinel in 1984, fresh out of 83. And we did our paste up. If people don't know what that means, we pasted up the galleys of the text.
It had wax on the back. It was hot wax. Yes, the same way we did the Dundalk Eagle and the Eye when I was a kid in Dundalk. Yes, Avenue newspaper. The whole deal.
The place where we did the paste up and the printing for the Montgomery Sentinel newspaper. Montgomery Sentinel, by the way, was where Bob Woodward got his start before he went to the Washington Post. Anyway, I was up at the shop where they were doing the paste up, supervising the sports pages, and the person pacing up said, "Hey, we've had some people in here all secretive. They're doing starting a new sports paper in Baltimore. And here's the guy's name." So I call up Bob Paston at the Baltimore News American. He says, "I don't know what you're talking about. There's nothing going on. That's somebody
making
stuff up."
I can even do that
in
Paston's voice. I mean, that's Paston being a really, a good
so
editor.
They said, "Nothing going on." I sent him a packet of information anyway. And I didn't hear a word.
That's the kind of reporter Paston wants. Somebody that wasn't going to take no for an answer.
A couple months later, I get a call. I was so ready. I had accepted a job at Fort Myers, Florida, to go down there in August of 83 to help them put out their huge, giant football preview section. I get a call from Bob Paston at the News American and said, "Hey, you want to come work for me in Baltimore?" I was 23. I didn't want to leave Baltimore. I said, "Hell yeah." So I went and joined the staff at the Sports First.
That was September,
1 year and 3 days.
September of 83. It launched September 15th of 83. It died, September 20th of 84. And in that time, the Orioles won the World Series, the Redskins won the Super Bowl, and the Ravens left Baltimore. In that period, and Len Bias was on the team, but not dead. He didn't die till 86. But like that 1 year snapshot, because last year was the 40th anniversary, and I invited you on, and I invited everybody. We did a whole like hour and 15 minutes about the legend of that newspaper, and I even brought out tear sheets and all that kind of stuff and layouts. But I met you and met so many people, and when that thing imploded on the day of my son's birth, September 22nd, 1984. I wound up getting staffed onto the News American as a 16-year-old, a senior in high school, but all of you lost your jobs, and there was a whole Sacramento contingent. So I want you to tell the story of Maury Mock and Scott LaBarre. Scott was the guy, if anybody ever has seen my documentary, any of the rock and roll stuff, Scott was the guy. I was out in the newsroom, and he said, "Hey, kid, a guy named Steven Tyler from Aerosmith is going to be calling. Can you put some questions together, do a story on Aerosmith?" "Yeah, Mr. LaBarre, yes, I can." And then it was Rush, and then it was Paul Stanley, and then it was, "I can get Paul Stanley on the phone? What?" I was 15 years old. So, like, the newspaper thing was eye-opening for me, cuz, you know? But all of you by then were like scrambling with your livelihood trying to get a job, right? And in a shrinking industry, even then, Sacramento called, and all of you went to
Well, hang on.
Sacramento.
I'll give you that story for real quick, a Scott LaBarre story. So I don't talk to him a whole lot. He's still working, even though he's like 70 now. He still worked at Sacramento Bee. I texted him and I said, "Scott, you want to go see the Orioles?" He said, "Only if Jim Palmer pitches." I'm like,
What if
"Okay.
Jim Palmer will be there?
I don't know," but I said, "They need him to pitch right now. They need Palmer right now pitching with that staff." Anyway,
Well, I hope you have
I
a
said,
good time at the games this weekend out in
"Oh, it'd be great."
Sacramento. You know, I
But let me
mean,
tell you how we all ended up in a group
sure.
of people ended up in Sacramento. So I got laid off, 23 years old. I don't have a worry in the world. I tried to get on the Sun. The Baltimore Sun said, "No, we're not hiring you." I put out a bunch of resumes. I got two job offers: Rochester, New York, and Sacramento, California. Rochester would have allowed me to be within a 10-hour drive of home. But when the day I interviewed, they had a story on the front page of the winter snow forecast. They were going to get 112 inches of snow that winter. And then I went and interviewed in Sacramento, and they're talking about how you're a 2-hour drive to San Francisco, 2-hour drive to Lake Tahoe. We have two rivers running through town. We don't get snow. You can drive to the snow. Plus, we're going to pay you $150 more a week. That was a lot of money in 1984.
Dude, I remember those union books and scale and wage. And, you know, when I was 17 at the Sun, and I knew what every newspaper paid, and I sent, letters out to the Sacramento Bee Sports. I have the rejection letters in a box. I should have
We
grabbed the Sacramento Bee rejection letter I had. It wasn't written by
answered you.
you. Yeah, but I got rejected by everybody.
Oh well, I sent out when I got out of college. I sent 100 resumes, and I heard from two people. So that's
Well, you got a gig.
my first gig out of college was at the Maryland Coast Press twice a week in Ocean City, Maryland. That was the only job offer I got.
I just
It
hope
was
you'd
pretty
grown up to
cool.
work. If I would have grown up to write at the Dundalk Eagle, my father would have been proud of me. You know what I mean? And I was doing that when I was 15. I'm in the newsroom with you guys. I'm doing stories. And then you guys just disappear to Sacramento. I always found that to be really romantic when I was young. Like I sent out hundreds of resumes. I had job offers. I got a job offer at the Anchorage newspaper to cover their hockey team in 1989. And
McClatchy owned that paper.
I almost it was McClatchy paper. I have all of the rejection letters, all of the acceptance letters. Like, I have everything I ever, Playboy, Rolling Stone, Time magazine. I tried to get a job everywhere. That was the scramble for everybody. Get landing in Sacramento and spending a life there as a kid from Ocean City and from Baltimore, and you're loving the Orioles, and I know you loved the Colts when you were a kid as well. Like, give me the Sacramento thing, because that newspapers and sports really took you on a journey in life that put you in a different. You do real estate now. I see you out there having a good life, and the Orioles are in Sacramento. It's the most unlikely thing that the Orioles are coming to Sacramento this week,
Right.
right, for you,
Now
right?
we've been able to see them every year in Oakland for one series and every other year in San Francisco for one series. But going to Oakland, San Francisco, that's a haul. That's almost like for you going to New York. I mean, not quite, but it can be 3 hours with traffic. It's a whole day. It's a big deal to go to the San Francisco to watch a game. I will be there August 31st to watch the Orioles. But back to Sacramento. I came in 84, and in the next 3 years, Ron Wenig from the Sports Department came. Wayne Davis from the news desk came. Maury Mock from the news desk came. And Scott LaBarre came. So we had five, News American employees at the Sacramento Bee newsroom, which probably had about 200 employees at the time, and five were from the same newspaper, worked
and
at the same
not
time.
uncommon, almost like in sports where you bring lieutenants with you. Bob Paston went to St. Louis at the Post-Dispatch. He took Bernie Miklas with him. He took
Jeff
Jeff
Gordon.
Gordon with him, right? So like that was kind of how it worked. I mean, in the industry, I mean, even when Jack Gibbons came to the Evening Sun, he brought Philadelphia and Baltimore had a little bit on skates with editors too. Once you went to Sacramento, I never heard from any of you. It felt like you guys were living the good life out in California. That's all I knew, man.
And that's where you'll like this. I was planning to be there maybe 3 years. I got job interviews and a couple job offers, but it was good to stay. And I got a famous, now this is before email, blah, blah, blah. I sent a letter to Vince Doria at the Boston Globe. And I met him through Bob Paston. And I said, Vince, I'm getting these offers. I'm getting these things. I'm pretty young. At that time, I'm 25, 26. And he said, a lot of guys will have layout pad, we'll travel. Layout pad was where we sketched up the paper on a layout pad. And he said, and then, you know, they go to 3 jobs in 10 years and they're doing the same exact thing. So is that what you want to do? So maybe it's best to stay where you are. That was Vince Doria.
Vince Doria sent me a rejection letter in Boston. With a dangle that something could be happening, and then he sent me a rejection letter from ESPN.
Yeah,
and Vince
he
Doria's a
was.
legend. I've never met Vince Doria. I never met him. But I definitely talked to him on the phone, and I definitely got rejected by him.
Right. So, yeah. So anyway, well,
life
here
is
we
a
are.
sports writer, man. Life is a sports writer, right? So you were the editor of the Sacramento Bee. I am correct in saying that, correct?
Sports editor.
Sports editor.
I did a lot of jobs there.
How many years were you the sports editor of the Sacramento Bee? That's a big thing.
Well, I was like number two for many years. And then I went and worked in news for a while. I was the Sunday editor for the whole paper. I was the news editor for the whole paper for a while. A sports editor, probably five to 8 years. Unfortunately, I wasn't the sports editor at the heyday when the Sacramento Bee had 40 employees just in the sports department. I think they have 3 now. That's how things have changed.
Yeah, and I, you know, the shrinking.
And they're not
of
covering
media.
The A's. They don't have anybody covering the A's. It's like a beat.
Listen, I see you make political posts. I see you. By the way, Tom Cousins is my guest, my friend, one of my bosses, and I'm about to kiss your ass if you don't mind this at all.
Go for it.
Tom's out in Sacramento. He worked at the Sacramento Bee for a long, long time, and is now
34
in
years.
real estate. He's from Baltimore via Ocean City. If you just got here, but he was one of the people, and here's where I'm gonna. I'm not going to get weepy because I did with Jack Gibbons the other day at Jim Henneman's funeral. But, you know, I walked into that funeral last week and there's Tim Kurchin, there's Peter Schmuck, there's just all these people that I were Bill Stecca, who was one of our colleagues at the News American, just all of these people. I didn't know that Henneman was the Bullets PR director. I knew Stedman had been the Colts PR director. It's just amazing. The swimming of sports and media and curiosity and which takes the common that does not and what's capitalized and what's not and the English language and facts and who, what, where, why, when, and all of that. I cannot begin to tell you, and I know I told you this over coffee when we had coffee and those delicious eggs in Sacramento last year, and I know I told Scott LaBarre this, but I want to say it publicly. I am so blessed that you guys all took me in and taught me right from wrong, and that I have had a bullshit detector attached to my soul that was installed by Bob Paston, by you, by John Hawkins, by Bernie Miklas, by every Tough Love editor, Nusgar, Molly, all of you. I was so fortunate. Stan, Larry Harris, once I got up the street, Mike Marlowe, my God, Mike Marlowe was like a father to me, mentor to me, and Jack Gibbons, all of these amazing people that helped me know right from wrong to build whatever I've built here for better or worse all these years. And anytime I get one of you old OGs on, part of the reason I bring you on to talk about Sacramento and all that, but I just want to give you love and say, like, that has served me so well in my life that I asked questions and God answered and demanded truth.
Yep.
That's all you got for me, cuz?
Thank you. Yes, you've done well.
No, it ain't even about that. It's just about knowing right from wrong and like being trained in a newsroom. I just think there was something about being in that environment where
I think you took a lot of abuse from us.
Oh, I was 15. You know, I mean, Ron Wenig specifically. Tell him I didn't invite him on a show.
Yeah, okay.
Tell him that. So
Yeah.
you watch the Orioles every night? Are you like you're
No, but
totally
I
into the
follow
soap
it.
opera or no?
I can't watch it every night because we don't get, whatever it is they are broadcast on these days. But of course, I got the ESPN app. You can follow along. And I know they're having an awful year. So this weekend is going to feature two last place teams for the weekend series. I bought these tickets as soon as they were announced. I said, I don't care what it costs. There's not a bad seat in this house because it only seats 12,000 or 14,000.
What'd you pay, cuz?
I paid $100 a ticket
What could you
for
pay
six
this
tickets.
weekend? I'll get on SeatGeek and find out. But
Right now,
they
there's well, right now they're just. I got an email yesterday that the tickets for this weekend are at a 20% discount from the team, and they're
well,
probably a
play
60.
sports columnist for me. What they're there for a year or two? How many years are they there? I
Three
don't know.
years. Three
3 years.
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 That's
Okay.
the deal. Now, who knows? But if that stadium will ever be built in Vegas, Vivek Ranadive, who owns the Sacramento Kings, saved them, built the beautiful Golden 1 Center in downtown. He bought the Sacramento River Cats and the baseball stadium out in West Sac. They're actually in West Sacramento, right over the river, and with a great view of the iconic Tower Bridge in the background. Anyway, he bought that Rivercats team, and he's the one that negotiated to bring the A's here. He is one guy that would have the money, should the opportunity present itself, to bring the A's
Would
to Sacramento.
Sacramento support the A's like that? Would they get 40,000 people enough that like? And I don't even know what baseball is anymore. They're going to take half the upper deck here. They're going to spend $600 million making the stadium smaller. They are.
Oh, it seems like to me they will. Right now, they're basically selling out every game, but it's only 12,000 something. We are the second lowest attendance in Major League Baseball. Who's the worst? Tampa Bay.
Oh, Tampa, sure. Yeah. I
Because
mean,
they're
well,
also
except
playing
when
in
the
the
Yankees
division.
show up and
Yeah.
play.
Yeah.
Well, this
Well,
is
they're playing in
where,
it.
because you're old baseball, man, and you were at the News American and Sports First when the Orioles were dangling and teetering and might be moving to DC and like all of that. So, like,
And the
and
Colts.
being,
Oh.
well, and also in Sacramento, you're like, hey, we tried to steal teams. We began the conversation talking about why it didn't happen 40 or 50 years ago. And for all of the Denvers and the Arizonas and the Tampas and the Miamis that have come online, and even the Montreal Washington thing, the dangling of these teams, like the Expos playing in San Juan and Tampa trying to dangle to be played in Montreal a couple of years ago, and now the roof blows off, and the A's don't have a home. They've been playing in squalor for a decade and more, and it's just so half-assed, and I don't know how the Sacramento people would react to high-priced tickets for low-end Major League Baseball that's temporary. And like you're the old
I don't
sports
think.
editor there. What is the columnist in you write about that at the Sacramento Bee?
Well, they overcharged because they thought they could. Fair enough, market value, all that stuff. I don't regret paying what I paid. I wanted to see the Orioles, so I am going to see them, and I got a great view. I'm in right field, the row two, and ironically, it's two sections away from the lawn. Now, I think it's the only. Major League Baseball team plays in a stadium with lawn seating in
I
right
love
field.
lawn seating when I'm in Arizona and Florida at spring training. There's nothing better than lawn
It's spring
seating for a
training.
March game,
But
yes.
for a regular season game, I don't think anybody has lawn seating. The lawn seating started at $85. Imagine paying $85 for a chance to sit in the grass out in right field. When the Rivercats came to Sacramento, those lawn tickets were $2. Anyway, they're not getting 85 now. Every day there's an email that goes out. You can buy a lawn seat for tonight's A's game for $25. That's still, that's a nice deal.
All right,
But
that's a
it gets
walk
you in the
around.
building, right?
Yeah, well, that's the Major League Baseball that their bar now, like with movie tickets being whatever a movie ticket is, baseball wants to get $25 for you to walk in. That's kind of like that's their per cap. That's where their head is. And the discount thing here is the Birdland package with cheaper drinks and like all of that. But they're trying to sell into the history of the Orioles and the future of the Orioles, who allegedly are still going to be here in 2029. The Oakland A's aren't going to be in Sacramento allegedly anymore. So it is
You
sort
have to
of
wait,
like a,
Nestor.
it is a little bit of a cab ride, right? It is a little bit of a, hey, come get the circuits while it's in town. It's a little barnstorming thing,
Yes, yeah.
right?
But keep in mind that as far as I was in Vegas in December, the Tropicana is gone. There's a mound of debris when I was there. There's no sign of a stadium being built. So let's see if they build it,
Well, and I
right?
keep coming back. I was in Vegas 3 weeks ago too, and like sort of the Mirage is all boarded up. It's crazy. But I looked at it and I thought, they got a football team here. They got a hockey team here. Wayne Newton's here every night. The Sphere's here every like I don't know where the passion or energy is going to come for baseball, or the baseball's going to bring tourism. The Tigers fans are going to go to Vegas because they want to sit in 110 degree heat and watch a lousy A's team take on their Tigers. I mean, because I'm a baseball guy, right? My name's Aparicio, so I come at it honest. I did that crazy baseball tour back in 2015. I did 30 ballparks in 30 days because I wanted to see them all. I've been to
Right.
most of
Nice.
them,
I remember.
right? I haven't been to Atlanta yet since they built the Battery. So, I mean, maybe I'll get there. I probably have been. And Kevin Byrne and I used to do this, the old PR director of the Ravens. We used to talk about how many stadia we had seen NFL games in, because I'd seen a lot of them, right? Because I'd seen all the old ones, a lot of the new ones, and some weird ones. And I'm going to use one of the weird examples for what you are in Sacramento. I went to, I flew into Memphis, Tennessee in 1997 to see the Houston Oilers play the Baltimore Ravens in Memphis, Tennessee, as the
Wow.
Tennessee Oilers that were about to move to Nashville. Right. They were there 5 minutes. They played in the Liberty Bowl. There were 4,400 people in the Liberty Bowl. Like, it was like there was literally, I mean, I have the pictures, right? It was literally 5,000 people maybe in the Liberty Bowl. And they didn't stay. They were supposed to stay a couple years. They were living in trailers. They were still training in Houston and moving to that. There was this disaster for an NFL franchise. And I saw it and I'm like, if I lived in Memphis, why would I come see the Houston Oilers play the Ravens at $150? Because they were trying to scalp the tickets. They weren't, hey, what, $10? Stop by and see the game. And when the
Right.
Steelers came in, it was 50,000 Steelers fans that went into Memphis and all were rolling dice in Tunica. But I've seen these temporary huts and these little circus village things get built. Buffalo had it with Toronto during the plague, and you couldn't let fans in and like all that. So I could have gone up there and seen a major league game in the Buffalo Stadium or whatever. I don't know. I love you and I love the Orioles. I don't know why I didn't fly to Sacramento this week, because I really should have. You know what I mean? But you're telling me I got 2 more years to be able to do this, right? So
Well,
next year I can come and go to
three
Tahoe and do
years,
through that.
they have a 3-year deal with a possible fourth if the stadium's not built. Now, that's not to say you know how the sports world works. Maybe this A's owner, who is not part of the problem with trying to draw people to the A's right now, is A's fans in Northern California do not like the owner. I don't, whatever, so they don't want to give him money. It comes down to that. So I can see a possibility in the first season, if they're 12,500, that they might get an offer to go somewhere else for two seasons.
See,
I
that's
don't
what I'm
know.
saying. It's just a mess. You know what
We
I
don't see it
mean?
happening, but meanwhile, Vivek Ranadive, who has a lot of money, I'm sure he's angling. He doesn't talk to the media, doesn't talk to the public. We don't know what he thinks. When they fired the coach, Mike Brown, he didn't talk to the media, but I can bet he's working behind the scenes to try to wrest this team away from John Fisher and figure
Why
out a
would
way
he
to get
want
here.
competition for the Kings there?
It's synergy. I don't think they look at it as competition. They're different
Okay.
seasons. He bought the Rivercats, and I thought the same thing. Why would he want to buy a Triple-A team? Well, he wanted the stadium.
I mean, when you're wealthy, I mean, why would Rubenstein want this baseball team? He just wanted to make a bobblehead of himself and feel good. You know what I mean? Like, if you feel like he's doing something philanthropic or something, it's like, and now they're in last place and he's disappeared. So you know about owners? You're out in front of it when it's good. I mean, that's the definitive fit 40 years of my sports them. Like, it tells me all I need to know is when you're hiding, when you're losing, like. Gino
Well, the
Reotta
Kings owner.
didn't hide when he was losing. You know what I mean? Like, I grew up in a generation. Johnny Oates didn't hide when he lost. Cal Ripken didn't hide when he lost. You know what I mean? Mark Andrews drops a ball, and you know, next time you hear from him, spring training. Like, it's bizarre to me that we've lowered the bar, but that's. There are no columnists anymore. I mean, the players used to sort of fear the
You're right. There's no
columnists.
columns. Yeah.
The organization sort of feared the media a little bit of like,
Yeah.
hey, we don't want the media writing bad stuff because it's true. You know what I mean? Like the bad stuff that was written by the media in Baltimore was true, not untrue. And
Well,
then there's
they
just the
did a number on
accountability of
Bob
all of it.
Irsay, right? The media had a field day with Bob Irsay.
Well, and didn't he deserve it?
Of course. When he came back from Jacksonville on a mission to relocate the team there, he came arrived at the airport at BWI Airport drunk and got in a shouting match with the great late John Steadman that was broadcast live.
I'm not talking to
And
you.
he
You're a
and,
bad man. You're a bad man. I'm not talking to you.
Well, news, it was broadcast because it happened to be like the noon news or whatever, 5 o'clock, whatever time. And
Azarona. Check the towers. I've been to Azarona.
he said, I didn't go to Jacksonville to try to take the team there. Yeah, whatever.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it's funny, man. Tom Cousins is my guest, longtime editor, sports guy, news guy, newspaper guy at the Sacramento Bees, now in the real estate space out in Sacramento,
That
enjoying a
may be winding
beautiful
up.
life out there.
That may be winding up soon because I'm ready to just keep traveling.
You know what? Every time you come back to Ocean City, I want to take you across a bridge and take you to the Hobbit, get a crab cake, or get some Fisher's popcorn or something. I should go to Ocean City with you and have you tell
Thrasher's,
me the history of Ocean City through your eyes, having grown up there in the
Thrasher's
70s, you
French
know?
fries.
Thrasher's French fries, the first thing you do?
Well, I'm not a big fan, but that the line, even in April when we were there, 100 people deep in line to get Thrasher's French fries in April.
All right, so you're a kid, grow up in Ocean City in the 70s. My Aparicio uncle, my dad's brother, his name was Omar. Everybody knew Omar. Omar was the wine sommelier at the Chesapeake restaurant and all the sports writers, Vince Bagley and all, they used to have the media lunch back in the 70s every week at the Chesapeake. The media would get together and just talk. It was like a fun, friendly thing that Stedman put together and whatever. And Omar was the wine dude there, so he knew everybody. And he then worked at, are you ready? The Bonfire
Oh,
in
yeah, I
Ocean
know the
City,
bar.
okay? So summer of 75, 6, 7, maybe 78. In those summers, my father was a stock boy at Mars Supermarket Pantry Pry. He was the overnight manager of all the he stocked the shelves. My father, but he was a manager of all that. And so he had weekends off. So on weekends, my uncle worked at the Bonfire. He was the general manager of the Bonfire and then later the Flaming Pit, right above Ordell Bracy's Flaming Pit here in Bedonia.
The
And
Bonfire
so
was owned at the time by Sam Tostin. He was a pretty well-known.
you know that Cole Tostin, his grandson, runs Blue in Ocean City. So we're gonna
Not
get
right.
in. I'm gonna go to the beach with you. I'm gonna have to do. I'm gonna grab Tom Perlazzo down at Ocean City. We're gonna do this. So my uncle was the manager of the Bonfire, and my father, his brother, would put me in his Torino, and we would drive down to Ocean City
No
listening
seat
to.
belts.
No, see, no. We were, you, I, the, here's the music we're listening. You ready? This will tell you the summer it was. Love, love will keep us together. So it was like Captain and Tennille summer, and it was Paul McCartney and Wings doing Let 'Em In. So driving to Ocean City, we would get down there. My uncle had a place on 27th, 28th behind Jolly Rogers, that long
Oh,
stretch
yeah.
of road with the apartment complexes.
In the
My
bay, on the
uncle
bay.
had the bay, right? So I spent my summers, parts of my summers of 75, 6, 7, watching Charlie's Angels, right? All my cousins were there, all my Aparicio cousins were there. And so I remember Ocean City. And when I have Al Hondo Handy on to talk about his book, we talk
Oh,
about the
yeah.
softball diamonds down on 4th, 5th Street, where the water tower was, and all the softball games that got played down there with Phillips and all the crab houses
Yep, I played there.
and the Embers and all of that. So I have some Ocean City
The Purple Moose was a
stock.
good team.
But you spent your life down there that period of time, right? That was year-round
My
for you.
growing up years was amazing. And nobody cared about work permits, you know, stuff like that. We're bussing tables at 12, 13 years old, renting umbrellas on the beach. It was a great life.
So it gave you work ethic, though, too, right?
Of course,
People had money in their pockets and coming down to the beach, and little Tom was going to get it, right?
Trying to. I sold the Baltimore Sun papers when I was 10 and 11, walking on the beach. Check this out. It was 10 cents, and I got 3 cents. They got 7. But they people felt sorry for me. They might give me a buck or 50 cents. I still only had to pay the vendor 7 cents. I got the rest of it.
You know, I never lived at the beach. I chased girls down there. I tell all these stories. Senior week this week, it was a legend, right? It was great. And my 40th anniversary, getting out of high, my 40th graduation was yesterday. So I've been sharing these senior week memories and all that. But my kid went down there and lived for 5 years and worked at Secrets taking the Scopie pictures. So my kid became Secrets. A Scopie guy, right? You know, so indoor bar Scopie guy where people had money ready to give you, where on the beach, it was always like
pictures. Do people know what telescope pictures are?
Oh, my God. In my audience, everybody knows what Scopies are. Of course, man, you know.
I have one from 19. Check this out. So my dad must have been doing okay that year because my family rented a cabin in 1966 at 82nd Street. That was way up north. I believe it was a two-bedroom, one bath.
It looked like Nag said that, right? Houses on stilts, probably nothing, right? Yeah.
The whole summer we spent there. My mom and she had 5 kids. My dad came on weekends. And my fondest memory is Joe the lifeguard. He was probably 21, but I looked at him like he was a legend. He was as big a figure to me as Brooks or, you know.
You know, your life takes you from Ocean City, Maryland to Sacramento. Tom Cousins will be at Oriole Baseball this weekend. It is a bummer they're in last place.
Can I share two quick stories before we go?
I love your stories, Tom Cousins, okay. Of course.
The one is, so I went to the University of Maryland, graduated in 82. I'm going to say it was the spring of 81. It could have been 82 because I don't remember what year Cal came up. But the Orioles came to University of Maryland to play the Terps in an exhibition game. And I'm working at the paper, so I cover it. It might have been 80, 81. I just can't remember the year. But anyway, Cal wasn't up in the bigs yet. But, man, the girls knew him, right? And after the game, he was just signing autographs, probably giving out phone numbers, whatever he was doing.
Well, he had blue eyes and potential, right? I mean.
He had hair. And Earl Weaver yelled some really choice language basically, we got to get out of here, kid. Let's go. And it was just funny. And he just stood there signing autographs. I just took it all in. I said, dang, all the women loved him.
You know, you mentioned Earl Weaver. His name's come up so much this week. I had John Miller on who wrote the book on Earl Weaver, the last manager. By the way, I know you,
like the other John Miller.
Yeah, the other John Miller. And by the way, rave reviews on that book. So
I read the book. Well, excellent. I read it. Yeah, I loved it.
You know, you're the fourth person this week that's told me that they read the book and loved it. And I told John that, and one of my lawyer buddies told me last week over some crabs, hey, I read the book. It's fantastic. And I'm like, and I have the book. And I said, I want to do this on a beach. I don't want to do this here, there, last place. You know, I'm going to do a beach trip. At some point, I'm going to get to your beach. We're going to be broadcasting from Ocean City, Maryland, third week of August for Mako down there. We do that every single year. Tom Cousins spent his childhood in Ocean City, Maryland. He is born in Baltimore, but spent his life out in Sacramento chasing the Sacramento Kings and Sacramento Sports at the Sacramento Bee. At one time in 1984, he was a big brother. I looked at all of you like the way you looked at Joe the lifeguard, you know, when you were my big brothers. You know, when you would pull me over, any of you, and give me any like help with the English language or tell me what to do or what not to do or how to do it, I took it all as gospel, man. I just drank it all in. So I am grateful to you. I'm apologetic.
Remember, Nestor, I was only 23, so it wasn't like I was a grizzly veteran. We had John Stedman in the room. That was fun.
Yeah, but all of you were you were there working. You had the job I wanted. You know what I mean? And I wanted to study what you were doing, whether it was layout, whether it was editing, whether it was making sure the facts were right in this, again, making sure we got it right because it was going into paper. My dad was reading it. It had to be right. It had to be correct. It had to be honest. It had to be truthful. It had to be factual. Like those were basic standards of my life that we've just eschewed in our society at this point that I can't thank all of you enough for holding me to that standard. I mean, literally.
Nestor, in the summer of 84, to share this, the connection with Baltimore and Ocean City and all that, we worked at the Sports First. We worked from 6 p.m. to 2 a.m. Sunday through Thursday. Friday morning at 2 a.m., I get off work. Instead of going back to my apartment in Ellicott City, I go right to the over the bridge, down to Ocean City. I have breakfast at like 5 a.m. with the fishermen. I spend the weekend there. I get in the car like at 2 o'clock on Sunday and make it back to my Sunday night shift. I did that all summer of 84.
I did that the summer 86 and 87, 88. You know why? Because I worked at the Evening Sun. And my shift was I had to report to work. When I first took the job,
oh, that was brutal.
Jack wanted me in at 1 a.m. every night. We moved it back to 11 to 7. I took an 11 to 7 shift, except in the nights when I went to Hammer Jack's, then 1 o'clock was fine when I was working. But we got off Friday morning. And our paychecks, Mike Marlowe and I would walk from Calvert Street down Guilford through the block. We never stopped at the Pleasure Palace, nothing like that ever.
Oh, sure.
And we went to Nick's Town and Country, which is now a kebab joint next to Uncle Lee's. And we would get breakfast sandwiches at 6 a.m. We walk back. And the woman that gave our paychecks, it's before direct deposit, the woman that had our paychecks, 8 a.m., the cage would open on the sixth floor, and we could get our paycheck at 8 a.m. on a Friday morning. So we would wait for our paycheck unless I didn't need it. And then I'd say to Marlo, dude, I'm going to Ocean City. I'm getting off at 4 a.m., and my girlfriend Sandra would pick me up, or my buddy Rob would pick me up. 4 a.m., he would cop out of work at Friday at the poop plant, and at 4 a.m., I would get back to Eastern Avenue, pack my bag, and we would beat all the traffic, and we would be in Ocean City watching the sun come up on Friday morning without a room.
That's why I was there.
Without a room. Showers on First Street, out on the boardwalk, right? I mean, literally Division Street, and without a room, and hat in hand, and say, dude, we're going to find Batman tonight. We're going to find girls. We're going to walk the boardwalk. We're going to eat bad stuff. We're going to chase girls. We're going to listen to music. We're going to look at girls. We're going to get a tan. We're going to play volleyball. We're going to look at girls. And that's what we did. And I went back to work. I needed to be back to work Sunday night at 1 a.m., sort of.
Right. And I had to be back, yeah. So
yeah, we could do a lot of damage in Ocean City in 72 hours, you know, in 1986, 87, 88 on a weekend.
Semester. You talk about paychecks, and I do remember a time at the Baltimore News American when you got your paycheck. I forget. I don't remember time or when it was available. And I went immediately to the bank on the next block and deposited or cashed it.
And put cash in your pocket.
Well, we didn't know how long the checks were going to be good.
Oh, of course. At the Hearst. Oh, yeah. Yeah, right.
You know, so we went fast.
Get it in there while the ink was nice and wet. I know what you're talking about. Tom Cousins and I were co-workers in 1984 at my first newspaper. It was not his first newspaper. It was called Sports First. You kids can look it up. I did a huge piece last year on the 40th anniversary of its closing, which was September of 1984, which was the day of my son's birth. Also, the weekend that Michael Jackson played RFK Stadium. So it was and the weekend before Springsteen brought the Born in the USA tour. So, I mean, good times in life. My son's well. Your life has worked out well. My thoughts to you and your real estate, the thing and all that. And I just hope you have a good time. You spent a lot of money seeing the Orioles play in Sacramento. You waited your whole life for the Orioles to show up in Sacramento. Jim Palmer's even going to be there on Friday night for you.
I'll look for him.
All right.
Hey, one more. One more quick one.
I love your stories, cuz. Go ahead.
So as a kid, we didn't have TV really, right? You didn't have the game on every night.
Well, you were in Ocean City. How the hell did you get TV in 1968?
Well, even in
Salisbury?
Well, we had cable TV in 1968. Yeah.
What?
And we got all the Baltimore channels. Yeah.
I did not know that.
It's called CATV. And we did have one Salisbury channel.
Listen, next time I work something out at Ocean City, I'm going to have you come to Ocean City and sit and tell me these Ocean City stories, because I am absolutely fascinated by someone that spent the 70s. Like, I got back into Torino with my dad in 76 and went home. You know, and I had to go to school at Colgate. You, like, got to live in Ocean City, Maryland. To me, that's almost as romantic as growing up on 33rd Street and being able to walk to Memorial. You know, like, that. The next best thing would have been, like, I grew up on 48th Street in Ocean City in the 70s. I'm like, well, that must have been fun, I guess. So,
it wasn't until 1969 when the Orioles got clobbered by the New York Mets, as you know the history of that, that I didn't – it was 1969 when I realized that – Brooks Robinson and Frank Robinson were not related, because I didn't have TV.
You had never seen them play.
Correct. And we didn't,
You didn't even get nobody, baseball cards in Ocean City.
Nobody cared about black and white then. I mean, it wasn't, I, you know, and I said, oh, damn, I guess they're not related. At nine, I knew, I recognized that. But Robbie was my favorite player growing up.
But you knew of him from the radio only.
Yeah, yeah. Get the little transistor in, one earbud.
All right, I'm going to have you back on. Well, you know, the good news is we can do this. We can be like Alan Alda in the movie same time next year because the Orioles are going to play in Sacramento again next year, I guess, if this is successful, right?
Every year the American League comes to town. We only get the National League teams every other year. So this year we don't get, say, the Dodgers because they're every other year.
So you're an old schooler like me. Let me tell you an old story that that I will end this one with because I don't get to tell this one much. The first team I ever hated was the 1973 Oakland A's. I was 5 years old. They beat the Orioles, right? So the A's of Rudy, Bando, Campanaris, Reggie, Holtzman, all, you know, Catfish, all those, Blue Moon Odom, all those guys, they were the original bad guys to me. You know what I mean? Like, so like Charlie Finley was the original, was going to rot in hell kind of guy when I went to church on Sundays. So Charlie Finley's daughter's coming on the show this week. And, you know, Charlie Finley and what the A's were and what the A's became and Billy Ball. I mean, the A's have this incredibly weird, the elephant, I mean, just weird, weird history all the way around. And this is another piece of that rich tapestry, right? Like them playing in Sacramento and you spending $100 to come see him play. The A's have been a circus all throughout, literally from the colors that they wear. No offense, that was my high school colors, Kelly Green and gold. So it's not too circusy, but it was kind of circusy. I mean, the Oakland A's and the A's, the Athletics back to Kansas City, it's been a circus 10 franchise.
Well, think about it, Nestor. They moved to Oakland in 1968. And by what, 72, they were the best team in baseball. That was pretty good. Gives them hope. Gives the Royals and the A's hope.
Yeah, I mean, I hear you. There's nothing better than those 72, 73 jerseys and stuff. The golds and the whites and the spandex and, you know, and the gold cleats. Perfect, you know. Hey, enjoy yourself out there. You've adopted the A's. Tom Cousins was my one-time sort of boss mentor 41 years ago at the Baltimore News American and at Sports First. He went on to a life being a sports editor. You'd have been a hell of an editor for me, right? You'd have cracked my knuckles, wouldn't you? I'd have been a good columnist for you, though, right, Tom?
Yes, I'm sure you would. Yeah,
you know what I'm going to do when I get off here? I'm going to go grab that box, and I'm going to find the rejection letter from the Sacramento Bee, and I'm going to take a picture and send it to you so you can tell me who did it to me. I am Nestor. We are WNST AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. Enjoy the baseball this weekend from Sacramento, California, a lovely burg. And hello to you, Scott LaBarre.